to retreat and kind of say, never mind, that's not Vladimir Putin's strategies.
Ukraine diplomacy moves to high gear. It's Wednesday, February 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online. Join us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Tonga continues its recovery, helping Myanmar's displaced. China's increasing presence in Africa. Afghanistan's stark media changes. Social issue artists. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Diplomacy has reached a fever pitch between NATO allies and President Vladimir Putin, with the White House offering the Russian leader two choices: an invasion of Ukraine with devastating consequences, or a negotiated peace with what Putin sees as humiliating concessions. As his next move remains unknown, Anita Powell reports.
The White House insists there is only one way out of the mounting crisis as Russia continues to amass troops and hold drills along the Ukrainian border. Diplomacy. But after a frenzied weekend of high-level talks between President Joe Biden and the leaders of Russia and Ukraine, an unsettling fact remains. No one knows what President Vladimir Putin's next move will be.
As we have said before, we're in the window when an invasion could begin at any time. We will not comment on any details of our intelligence information except to say that it could begin this week. The U.S. is ready for any situation.
Ukraine's leader on Monday said all signs point to an invasion.
We are told that February 16 will be the day of the invasion. We'll make it a day of national unity. The relevant decree has been signed. We will put out national flags, put on yellow-blue ribbons, and will show our unity to the entire world.
Washington has sent hundreds of millions in military aid to Ukraine, and on Monday ordered the temporary relocation of the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv. Will Pomerantz, acting director of the Wilson Center's Kennan Institute, told VOA that Putin is unlikely to back down. Putin has demanded that Ukraine be barred from its goal of joining the NATO alliance. The U.S. has dismissed that demand, citing NATO's open-door policy.
I don't see Putin really having an option to retreat because he has put so much at stake during this crisis. And to retreat and kind of say, never mind, that's not Vladimir Putin's strategies.
On Monday, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz visited Kyiv ahead of a Tuesday trip to Moscow and demanded clear steps to de-escalate the current tensions.
We are prepared to have a serious dialogue with Russia about questions of European security. NATO and the USA made proposals to Russia that we support. We now expect a reaction and answer from Russia.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told Putin that Russia should stay in the talks.
The readiness for listening to counter-arguments, our possibilities aren't exhausted. Of course, they shouldn't continue endlessly, but at this stage, I would propose to continue and increase them.
Biden says NATO allies are in lockstep and that Russia will face harsh sanctions if it invades. It is clear there is no love lost between the formerly United Soviet states. Russia annexed part of Ukraine in 2014 and controls it still. But in the testy, frigid Ukrainian capital, residents this Valentine's Day are trying to banish fear with the one force stronger than war: love. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
It's a very fluid and developing story. Join us for all the twists and turns by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia, Facebook at VOA Asia, and at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Satellite images suggest operations resumed at North Korea's uranium enrichment plant. Myanmar issue hardens divisions in ASEAN. Vietnamese refugees in Thailand facing delays for UN ID cards. For many Afghan evacuees, a rocky path to a new life. Russia's Olympic doping case helps China skirt dicey topics. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found at Facebook at VOA Asia. Join us as well on Instagram and Twitter and at voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. We have much more on the way. Right now, the United Nations is urging the international community to maintain its support of the South Pacific island nation Tonga, 1 month after a devastating volcanic eruption and tsunami. In Sydney, Phil Mercer has the latest.
On January 15, a massive undersea volcano unleashed tsunami waves that slammed into the Tongan archipelago. Foreign diplomats said that while the loss of life and the number of serious injuries were small, the damage to property was catastrophic. Much of the South Pacific nation has been blanketed with volcanic ash. The United Nations has described the international response to the disaster as fantastic. Aid has been delivered by air and sea by Australia, New Zealand, China, Britain, and the European Union. But it has been a relief operation like no other. Authorities in Tonga demanded that aid shipments be contactless to avoid the spread of the coronavirus in a country that had previously recorded just a single infection last year, with no deaths recorded so far. However, case numbers have now risen and the recovery effort is being hampered by a worrying outbreak of COVID-19. About 141 cases are now confirmed across several villages. The WHO says of January 4 this year, more than 130,000 vaccine doses have been administered. The UN resident coordinator responsible for Tonga, Sanaka Samarasinha, told Radio New Zealand the international aid effort must continue.
We need to strengthen national capacities to respond. We need to pre-position supplies as much as possible, ideally in the Pacific. And we need to make sure that we build stronger networks, more resilient networks of communication, so that we are able to provide some of the technical support that may not be available in each of these small countries virtually at times of such crises.
The World Bank has estimated the damage to buildings, communications and infrastructure was the equivalent of 18% of Tonga's gross domestic product or annual income. However, broader economic losses on farming and tourism aren't reflected in the bank's report. Tonga has a population of just over 100,000. It closed its borders in early 2020 as the coronavirus pandemic swept the globe. Entry to foreign nationals continues to be subject to strict biosecurity conditions. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Tuesday marked exactly 6 months since the Taliban came to power in Kabul. Residents remain uncertain about the future, citing a lack of jobs and assets that remain frozen amid increasing hunger and poverty. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great, as always, to have you here with us on VOA Asia. The United Nations and other aid agencies are increasing humanitarian operations in Myanmar in response to a growing displacement crisis there. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The number of displaced people in Myanmar has doubled to more than 800,000 since the military junta seized power from the democratically elected government a year ago. The UN Refugee Agency says that number is likely to rise in the coming weeks and months as fighting and armed conflict intensify across the country. UNHCR spokesman Matthew Saltmarsh says his agency and others are increasing emergency aid in support of as many of the displaced as possible. He says they are living under precarious conditions and have pressing humanitarian needs.
Humanitarian access in many parts of Myanmar remains restricted due to insecurity, roadblocks, and challenges in obtaining access approvals. As a result, host communities and local responders continue to play a leading role in assisting displaced populations, demonstrating solidarity with each other by donating what they can.
UNHCR says hostility toward the military has grown since the coup and violence is spreading across the country. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet warns Myanmar is heading toward civil war and the escalating conflict is threatening regional stability. The UNHCR has somewhat fluid, ambiguous relationship with the country's post-coup leader, Min Aung Hlaing. Saltmarsh stresses the need for organizations to have access, to get aid into the country, and to ensure that humanitarian staff can work freely. That access comes and goes, he says. For example, agencies have only been able to reach some 600,000 stateless Rohingya Muslims in Rakhine State sporadically. He adds development projects for their benefit have been relatively rare.
Life there is extremely difficult. The questions about pathways to citizenship still remain. This is a stateless population. As of course you all know, there's almost a million Rohingya who fled several years ago across the border to Bangladesh, and the situation on the ground in Rakhine State remains extremely challenging.
Some 200 UNHCR staff work in 10 locations across Myanmar. Saltmarsh says the agency remains committed to providing humanitarian assistance despite the difficulties. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Health authorities in Hong Kong recorded over 1,600 COVID-19 infections on Tuesday as their overwhelmed health system approached maximum capacity, with daily infections surging about 20 times over the past 2 weeks. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, so do the Beijing Olympics. Heading into competition today, Norway leads the medals table with 12 gold medals, 7 silver, and 7 bronze for a games leading 26 overall medals. Germany follows with 9 gold, 6 silver, and 3 bronze. The United States is third with 7 gold, 6 silver, and 4 bronze. Host China sits at number 6, having collected 6 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze. Kamilia Valieva, the 15-year-old Russian skater who is at the center of a doping dispute, is in first place after the short program. Switzerland's Mathilde Grémaud won gold in the women's freeski slope style, narrowly beating China's Olympic sensation, American-born Eileen Gu. China's Su Yiming took gold in the men's big air, as the 17-year-old claimed a second snowboarding medal of the Games to ensure the host's best Winter Olympics haul. Follow all of the latest Olympic news with us at voanews.com. The head of the U.S. Africa Command says security threats are growing across that continent. In his first on-camera interview since taking command 2 years ago, General Stephen Townsend spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb about his increasing concerns, including the spread of violent extremist groups, military inroads by China, and even threats from Iran.
General Stephen Townsend, the commander of U.S. Africa Command, told VOA the most active global competitor in Africa is not Russia, but China. Beijing, he says, is following billions of dollars of economic investments on the continent with creeping, steady, and strategic military investments. In 2017, China's military opened up a base in Djibouti just a few kilometers away from Camp Lemonnier, the United States' only military base in Africa. The general said Beijing now looks to Africa's western coast, intent on building a military airbase or naval facility in Equatorial Guinea.
They're putting chips down in all these countries on the Atlantic coast. They know that they won't get a yes in many cases from many of those countries. But by asking and trying to get a base in all these countries, one or two of them may say yes. And we think that the place that they've got traction right now is Equatorial Guinea. We're not asking them to choose between China and us. What we're asking them to do is consider their other international partners and their concerns, because a Chinese military base in Equatorial Guinea is of great concern to the U.S. and all of their other partners.
In addition to Chinese military expansion, Townsend said he's monitoring a less obvious threat to U.S. interest on the continent, the one from Iran.
We are starting to see them express increasing interest in Africa and starting to make some inroads there. I think their inroads are going to be malign in nature. And so we're just keeping an eye on it. That's very nascent. But it's happening now, and we're watching it.
Due to concerns over increased threats, officials say in the past year, the U.S. military has brought in new and improved defense systems and anti-drone weapons to Camp Lemonnier. The Pentagon has just completed a global posture review of U.S. forces and military resources around the world, a review that Townsend says, quote, ratified AFRICOM's current posture. The command did, however, lose some funding for military exercises with African partners. And for the last year, Townsend says he has shuttled troops in and out of Somalia. Donald Trump ordered most of the 800 U.S. troops out of the war-torn country in 2020 in one of his last foreign policy moves as American president.
They are in bases in the region, and we commute to work. And so who's in Somalia every day is less than 100.
How's that affecting the mission?
We are working hard to get our tasks done. I think that there's more effective and efficient ways to do that. We provide those recommendations to the Secretary of Defense, and we're waiting for decisions there.
But as Townsend awaits decisions from the Pentagon, political infighting continues in Mogadishu, where al-Qaeda affiliate al-Shabaab is adding to its ranks.
The threat of al-Shabaab is growing, and if increased pressure is not applied to al-Shabaab, I'm concerned that there's going to be a significant al-Shabaab attack. We've seen just suicide bombs going off in Mogadishu over the last 2 weeks. So I think they're expanding and they're a growing threat.
Carla Babb, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Britain will co-host an international conference with the United Nations next month to help address the growing humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan, where aid workers fear acute hunger could kill more people than the preceding 20 years of war. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Afghanistan had a thriving news and entertainment media landscape before the Taliban took over the country. 6 months into the Taliban government, VOA's Aisha Tanzim takes stock of how the media scene has changed.
This is what entertainment channels in Afghanistan looked like under the previous regime. Not anymore. The Taliban are asking them to change their output.
Islamic Emirate officials asked us to ban all of the serials that was aired from One TV.
So what have you replaced the serials with?
Right now it is replaced with Iranian serials. Yeah.
And why are Iranian serials more acceptable?
Because they say it is Islamic and they reserve the hijab and people like this kind of serials, according to Taliban or Islamic Emirate officials.
Popular live music shows on TV are now off the air. In the last 6 months, in-house entertainment production in most channels has come to a grinding halt.
This room used to be the production hub of One TV's entertainment programming. That has all ended. Now the women sitting here are trying to figure out how to produce Islamic programming that meets the Taliban's requirements.
When it comes to news, many journalists tell VOA self-censorship has become the norm under the new Taliban regime. They would not dare criticize the government or its performance like they did during the previous regime. No one wanted to say it on the record out of fear. Female journalists face their own set of issues.
Previously, we were allowed to go freely anywhere to report, but not anymore. For example, some ministries and offices don't allow women to come inside.
The Taliban have also told female anchors on news channels to change their appearance.
After the arrival of the Taliban, female journalists have to hide their hair. Previously, we covered our heads, but it was not so strict. Now we must fully change our wardrobe because they're in government.
Still, the Taliban seem to be giving people time to adjust. Some Afghan radio and TV channels still air music, although far less than before. A few foreign entertainment programs featuring women without their heads covered continue to be on air. The media's troubles include a flight of both capital and talent from the country. When the Taliban took over, most of the famous entertainers and journalists left the country. Foreign funding and ad revenue dried up. The channels are now struggling to survive with far less money and far more restrictions. According to an International Federation of Journalists survey, more than 300 Afghan media outlets have shut due to financial problems and Taliban restrictions. Thousands of media professionals have lost their jobs, 70% of them women. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
Suzanne Furstenberg is a self-described social issues artist who finds inspiration in America, economic inequality, racism, and climate change, among other issues. She doesn't limit herself to any particular medium, but instead uses whatever she thinks works best to draw attention to the most pressing issues of our time. Maxima Skalkov spoke with the artist about her works and inspiration.
I went to 24 different states, and I interviewed people who were suffering or recovering from drug addiction because I wanted to understand what it was all about. And so I went to homeless shelters, soup kitchens. What I do is I place these glass blocks in water fountains or reflecting ponds so that they'll be looking up from the water at people. And the reason I do this is because we'll walk right past someone who's on the street, slumped over from addiction, and we'll give them wide berth, but we're socialized to never walk past someone who's drowning.
Susan Furstenberg says she's a social issues artist who wants to draw attention to the pressing problems facing America. It took decades for the 61-year-old from South Dakota to discover the power of art. Life changed when she was in her 50s and attended a ceramics class with her son.
They made great bowls and platters and all sorts of things. I couldn't center my clay. And so I asked the instructor if I could just take a lump of clay and go sit off on another table and just try to make something. I ended up with a sculpture of a woman of indeterminate ethnicity who looked like she had something to say.
That's when Furstenberg realized her true calling was art. She tried many mediums, from sketching to ice carvings to mosaics. But she did not settle on one. Instead, she chose to use whichever medium worked best to highlight a particular issue. One piece focuses on mass shootings in the U.S. The U.S. flag is covered with names of killed in mass shootings starting in 1999. Behind the flag sits the U.S. Declaration of Independence, with its well-known phrase about the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Alcohol and drug addiction are a recurring theme in Furstenberg's work, along with other complex issues.
Over and over again, what people told me, they recounted stories of sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, isolation, bullying, loneliness, all these issues that are really psychological.
One of her best-known works is an installation honoring those lost to COVID-19 in America.
You know, a lot of artists, their work is very personal and introspective, and to watch her project at the DC Armory was really amazing because her ability to empathize.
It helped people understand the immensity of our loss. It alerted them to the fact that this didn't need to happen. It took the individual life and it made it matter.
Next, Furstenberg says she will focus on white supremacy and economic inequality. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Bethesda, Maryland.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're so happy you were able to join us today. Even though our program is concluding, continue with us online 24/7 at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Kiskejo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.